I am thankful to be able to stand here this morning because I wasn't so sure on Friday night. While the children were hearing Bible stories, doing crafts, playing games, and learning songs, like this morning's rap version of our parable, I was gathering with a group of adults in the session room to begin watching the movie Chocolat. The movie, as the title implies, is saturated in chocolate, dripping in chocolate. The plot revolves around a woman named Vienne who is swept in by the north wind to a small and very Catholic town in France. She might as well be a three-headed alien from another planet for the fear and suspicion she generates with her presence. She is the never-married mother of a young daughter, gasp. They don't ever attend church, shock. And she opens a chocolaterie at the beginning of the Lenten season. Shame. Did I mention that this is a very Catholic town? Everyone in the village knew everything there was to know about Vianne before they had ever even met her. That's pretty dangerous, isn't it? Friday night, as we prepared to start the film, I heard the words sacrilegious and immoral being whispered around the room. And they weren't referring to Vianne or the plot of the film. The participants were talking about me. How did I have the nerve to show the movie Chocolat and not bring any chocolate for the class? I pled to them. I asked them for mercy. I threw myself upon them. I tried to explain that I intended to buy chocolate, but when it came down to a time crunch, go home and feed the dogs, of which at that moment there were four in my house, or go to the store to buy chocolates, I chose the dogs. There was talk of rebellion. Chaos was about to break out all around me. I actually heard someone, Kim, say, "What time does that chocolate shop on the other side of the river close?" Fortunately, I did not lose complete control. From somewhere in the classroom, a voice of sanity was heard saying, "Have hope. At 8 o'clock, there will be ice cream with chocolate sauce and sprinkles." Ah, thank God. I think it was Susan. I'm not sure. I guess there isn't that much difference between teaching children and teaching adults. Snacks are never optional. And yes, I enjoy a little hyperbole as much as Jesus did. If you haven't seen the film Chocolat, it is one of those secular films overflowing with spiritual themes and symbols. And today's parable, with its feasting motif, offers powerful connections to the movie. Like the parable, it challenges us with these questions. Would I sit down with a stranger at God's table? And I know, if you have seen the film, you are thinking, well, if the stranger looks like Juliette Binoche or Johnny Depp, then yes, absolutely, bring on the stranger. Would I sit next to someone I distrust, someone I fear, believing they are there at God's invitation? And no, not Juliet or Johnny Depp. Would I come to the feast, even if I don't know who else is on the guest list? And who would I compel to come? Who would I urge to join the banquet? This great banquet parable, with some very critical variations, is told in Matthew 22 and in the non-canonical Gospel of Thomas, chapter 64. Three hearers of the word, three authors of the story, each retelling Jesus' story with a different voice. Matthew's version is both darker and more exaggerated than Luke's. In Matthew, it is a king who throws the party for his son who is getting married. With God as king and Jesus as the son, the imagery of the messianic banquet is pretty straightforward. But things don't go so well. Invited guests refuse the king's hospitality, making light of the invitation. Some of these invitees inexplicably murder the king's servants when they come to bring the news that the feast is ready. In retribution, the king sends his army, and an entire town is destroyed. Confronted with an empty table, the king sends the servants out to gather the good and the evil, since the original guests were unworthy and unavailable. For Matthew, there isn't much of a happy ending. More tragedy unfolds as the party finally begins. A guest is thrown out for wearing the wrong clothes. It is a strange and dark story, and seems to say more about the brokenness of humanity than about the mercy of God. Matthew's depiction of the host, that's troubling too. The king's despair and anger, i.e., God's despair and anger at being rejected, feels more like a human response than a holy one. Is Matthew offering us an insight into the depths of God's sorrow over humanity's fractured relationship with God? Does Matthew seek to remind us that though God is complete in and of God's self, having no need for us, God's greatest desire is to be in relationship with us, all of us? Through this lens, we might ask ourselves about our priorities and the attention we give to knowing God. Thomas's version is quite distinct from the others and probably less familiar. Listen to this variation of the same parable, paying special attention to the excuses and the conclusion. Jesus said, "A man had received visitors, and when he had prepared the dinner, he sent his servant to invite guests. He went to the first one and said to him, 'My master invites you.'
'I have claims against the merchants. They're coming this evening, and I have to give them my orders. I can't make it.'"
Okay. "He went to another and said, 'My master has invited you.'"
"Oh, I just bought a house, and you know how that is. I don't have any spare time. I'm sorry, I have to be excused."
"He went to another and said to him, 'My master invites you.'"
"My friend is going to get married, and I am to prepare the banquet. It's a lot of work. I just can't make it. I have to do this."
Okay. "So he went to another and said to him, 'My master invites you.'"
"I just bought a farm and I'm thinking about the rent. I can't make it."
The servant returned to his master. "Those whom you invited to the dinner have asked to be excused." The master said to his servant, "Go outside to the streets and bring back those whom you happen to meet so that they may dine. Businessmen and merchants will not enter the places of my father." That's the Gospel of Thomas. So Thomas's focus seems to be particularly on the precedence that work takes over the spiritual life. Thomas's guests' excuses are not unlike the ones in Luke, two being business transactions. One in Luke has purchased land and needs to go see about it, and another has bought several pairs of oxen and must tend to them. In Luke, the third one is getting married and cannot attend the party. In Thomas's version, however, all the excuses are related to finances, transactions, catering jobs. The conclusion, as with the other versions, is an exaggeration intended to wake us up. Is your business career more important than your spiritual life? Do you spend more time tending to your finances than to your faith? So now we get to the third version, Luke's retelling, which you heard in the wrap. In Luke, no towns are destroyed. No guests are thrown out for wearing a concert t-shirt and ripped jeans to the party. No segment of society, such as business people, are condemned en masse. In Luke, the servants are not sent out to gather in the good and the evil, but instead they are sent out to gather in the marginalized of society. The group that Luke names, the poor, crippled, blind, and lame, he names for a reason, a very specific reason. According to the Jewish law, individuals with certain physical imperfections were not allowed to bring their offerings for sacrifice. These stipulations are recorded in the book of Leviticus. You know that book of the Bible that you love to read. So Leviticus chapter 21. The Lord said to Moses, "Say to Aaron, none of your future descendants who have some kind of imperfection, are allowed to offer their God's food. No one who has an imperfection will be allowed to make an offering." Wow. This includes anyone who is blind, crippled, disfigured, or deformed. The list continues, even including people who are too small or have a rash. You're excluded. Do you have a broken hand or foot? Not you. No descendant of Aaron the priest who has an imperfection will be allowed to offer the Lord's food gifts. Jesus' challenge of this tradition wasn't simply about having compassion for those who are at a serious practical disadvantage due to their disabilities. He was offering spiritual restoration. Jesus was challenging existing religious practice and tradition in his inclusion of all people. He was chipping away at the implicit belief that blindness or disfigurement is an expression of God's condemnation. "Not so," says Jesus. "This is not a result of sin. It's simply not so. Go to the backwoods. Go to the alleys. Literal and metaphorical. Seek out the people on the park benches. Find those who are crippled in spirit, whose souls have been disfigured by discrimination and rejection and judgment by the church, and compel them. Urge them to come to the table. Convince them that the feast table is a safe place for them by sitting beside them. Ask them the story of how the church turned its back or closed its door to them. Why had the church labeled them as just not right? Ask them for their story and honor it with your attention." According to Luke, when Jesus told this parable, he was at the home of a Pharisee, and it was the Sabbath. Jesus was the guest of a religious leader, one of a group who questioned Jesus' faith practices all the time. As Southerners, we know that a good guest always brings a gift for the host. Jesus would have made a good Southerner. He brought not a lovely jug of wine or even a jug of water to change into wine. He brought stories. He brought stories as a gift. He brought stories of a table more expansive than they had ever imagined, a table so welcoming and forgiving that there is even room for you and I. Thanks be to God, who will not rest until the table is full and every seat is filled. Thanks be to God, who will not sleep until the house is brimming. Thanks be to God. Amen.